The easiest way to win playoff tickets is by following TSN 1050 on Instagram. Follow us, like our latest giveaway post, and tag who you want to bring to the game. It's that simple. Check us out at TSN 1050 on Instagram.
Never filtered, always fun.
I feel like I'm married to you, because I know what I want to say to you. You just feel like arguing today, don't you?
I'm in the mood.
Well, they had one of the best records in the league. Wouldn't you think they would be favored?
I don't know, honey.
Sweetie. You just want to argue today, honey.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the official playoff voice of the Leafs.
All right, so we have an official announcement to make right off the top of the show.
Yes?
We have a statement.
Okay, what's our statement?
Kawhi Leonard. We have a Kawhi Leonard on our hands.
We do.
Here on Overdrive. Kawhi Leonard and the situation down in San Antonio has now permeated Overdrive.
It's come right in the middle of Overdrive.
Yeah. We got a guy who's got people around him. I don't know what's going on in his personal life. I can't even give you an update on why he's not here, but he's not here today.
Doctors can't find anything wrong with him?
Nobody knows. Like, based on what our information is,
yes,
and the experts that we have down here at TSN Radio and Overdrive and our doctors and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
We think he should be here today.
Yeah, I would think. You know, it's
you would
Wednesday.
Think. It's a game day, right? It's a big day.
Yeah.
But Kawhi Leonard, also known as Jeff O'Neill.
Yes.
Apparently, he's got bigger and better plans and bigger and better ideas, so he's not here today.
Yeah, fair enough, I guess. I don't know. He's busy.
Is he busy?
He's running Cramerica Industries. Like, I wonder if that's probably what the next step is for this guy, is he needs a personal assistant.
But he doesn't do anything.
The thing is,
there's nothing for him to have a personal assistant for.
I know his personal assistant would show up and be sitting here and be like, Mr. O'Neill says, hey, buddy, or you're a loser, or any type of catchphrase.
I guess, you know, what we could do is just, like, hire a monkey and just have him sit there all afternoon, and it would be essentially the same thing anyway.
Baby monkey? Nah. It's all good.
Anyway, so Kawhi Leonard isn't playing tonight, but
well,
Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili, we're here, and we're ready to perform.
We're ready to rock.
And we're ready to rock this afternoon.
Tee up the game tomorrow. Lots of Toronto sports going on last night.
Well, how about the Raptors last night? You know what they did to Washington? They did to the Wizards what the Bruins did to the Maple Leafs in Game 2.
Yes.
They put up 44 points in the first quarter. They were up 17 after the first quarter.
Yeah.
And I know it got a little bit close in the fourth, but it never really was. And when it got to like 5 or 7 points, whatever the discrepancy was, the Raptors decided, all right, that's enough. They toyed with Washington last night.
Right, right.
And first time in franchise history, they're up 2-0 in a series, which says a lot about the history of the franchise.
Which hasn't been great.
Has not been great. It says a lot about the previous 4 years with Casey, DeMar, Kyle, JV,
right,
all being primary pieces on this team. And it says a lot about the 2017-2018 Raptors and the role DeLon Wright played last night. Jakob Poeltl played last night. CJ Miles was hitting big, big shots late in that game. And DeMar DeRozan went off.
Yeah.
DeMar DeRozan went off. The starters went off last night, and they're up 2-0. And I'm thinking they're going to sweep. I don't think they're going to stop down in Washington. I really don't.
Well, I'd like to see that. I mean, they're certainly feeling it, like, to the point where I thought it was a little overkill. Like, Lowry was giving it to DeRozan in the post game media. I don't know if you saw that. They're teasing him and whatever. Like, just remember that. Like, keep that. Fun-loving, you know, answers and that going along. Because if you have an off night, get up there and...
It's a good point. Like, they love the Abbott and Costello routine,
right,
after a win.
Right.
You go to Kyle Lowry when he's playing poorly, or he flew down to March Madness to catch a game,
yeah,
or went to the Super Bowl.
A little chippier.
All of a sudden, he's a little chippy.
Yeah.
And I guess that's human nature. I'm not surprised by that.
No, but. And I was excited to see it because you want to see a little personality, a little fun, and they deserve it. They won, and they dummied Washington. So enjoy the process, and I think you're on to something as far as them. I think obviously, you're never out of a series until you lose that home game.
Well, but that's right.
I think there was, if momentum carries over at all in basketball, which I don't know if it does, it sounds
home
like it
court
doesn't.
Means a lot more in the NBA, but not. It shouldn't with 1 versus 8.
Right.
Like, the Raptors are just such a better team right now. Washington has had so many problems. They're a talented team. Washington's got a lot of talent. John Wall, Bradley Beal.
Yeah,
you know, they've got some quality pieces. Otto Porter. Like, they've got enough there where they probably should have finished further up the standings than they did.
Right.
But it's turmoil.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm sure you've been in rooms before where you look around, you're like, we got some talent, but everyone just hates each other, and it's not going to work. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And that's where, on the flip side, you look at DeMar and Kyle and their relationship, and I think what that represents, and by all accounts, you know, this is a cohesive unit. They get along.
Yeah.
They've all got one goal. You know, all those cheesy cliches, but it appears to be a reality with the Raptors where it's the complete opposite with the Wizards.
Well, and it translates. It translates a lot of times when you have a good, tight team. They work hard together. They play together. Like, they do all these things together. And that consistency translates out onto the court, that chemistry. And the Raptors have chemistry. And, you know, we know DeMar and Kyle are the stars. But it's the supporting cast, to me, that has really pushed through. They've had some young guys. Dwayne Casey deserves a lot of love for his.
He's been committed to it.
Exactly.
He's been they played 13 different players last night. 13 players made an appearance.
Right.
Now, Van Fleet barely played. Norman Powell has become an afterthought. He played 5 minutes last night. But 13 different players in a playoff game. I know it was a blowout early, but still, they started the fourth quarter with a bench lineup. Like, you rarely see that. Conventional wisdom would suggest at least one of DeMar or Kyle would be on the court at all times in a playoff game.
For sure. You have your best players out there as much as possible, regardless of what goes on. But they felt that comfortable, not only with resting them, but with how well their bench players, you call it, are playing.
Are going to perform, absolutely.
Exactly.
And, I mean, this is game two. They had 2 days off in between games. They got two more off before the next game. These are moments where you can play Lowry 45 minutes if you have to.
Yeah, but they didn't need to.
They don't have to, right?
Why not save him? I think it's brilliant by Dwayne Casey, not only involving everyone in the series, because now you get everyone invested. I personally know how it feels to be part of the team, but you haven't contributed as far as minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I backed up a series or backed up, you feel like you want to contribute in other ways. Certainly, good in the room, all of that, work hard, preparation. But to get a few minutes, to feel like you contributed, I think that goes a long way. And obviously, Dwayne Casey did a good job of, he had the score, he felt comfortable, and those guys that came off the bench weren't just killing time, they were producing.
Yeah.
So, there was no negativity coming out of last night's game
nothing.
From the Raptors as far as, well, you know, they let him back in it here and there. I watched at least half of it. I mean, I had responsibilities with hockey, but the Raptors were on, TFC was on. We had a good tree going last night.
Yeah, the Jays took both games yesterday over the Royals.
I saw your tweet, the 11-5.
11-5.
By the way.
Just because a lot of people obviously are focused on the Leafs, the Raptors, and even TFC with what happened last night. The Blue Jays were going to fly under the radar regardless. If they're 5-11 or 11-5, it was going to happen. And it's been a weird start to the year. Like, they got rained out over the weekend in Cleveland.
Right.
They got rained out in a dome at home on Monday, which we haven't seen in 17 years.
Yeah.
So it's just been a really strange year. Donaldson's on the DL, and it doesn't sound like he's ready to return anytime soon.
No.
Yet they keep winning. And we actually caught up with Steve Phillips about an hour ago because we wanted to get to this conversation quickly. The Jays are playing later this afternoon. And also, Jose Bautista, some news on him today. Alex Anthopoulos, his boy, hooked him up with a minor league contract, which says a lot about what's happening with free agency in Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
That he had such a down year last year, I get it. But for him to have to wait 2-3 weeks into the season and sign a minor league deal.
Yeah, not even get, you know, a big ticket deal.
Just exactly. Like, hey, we'll give you a shot with the big club. You got to go down to camp and grind.
Yeah.
I'm surprised it's gotten this ugly for him. and almost this embarrassing for him this quickly? This is a guy who showed up at camp 2 years ago and felt like he had all the leverage in the world.
And wanted, what, from by all accounts, $1.50.
Allegedly 5 years, $1.50. This is a guy who made $20 million a year ago, and now he's sitting here waiting for an opportunity in the minors.
I still think we may have, I don't know if it'll be in the Jerry's percentage, but we could throw out potentially, I think he makes it back to the majors this year. I think they send him down there to get into shape and for them to track him, and they use him this year. I think he gets back up.
I have a feeling that might show up around 5:30.
Nice.
If Jerry shows up.
Well, we don't know.
Jerry Leonard at 5:30.
People are writing in saying that, oh, maybe getting treated for rabies. I doubt that.
Yeah, well, I guess there's a possibility.
You know what it is?
But...
is you won the bet. Did you nod the Washington
bet? Yeah, of course
bet?
I did. The Caps won last night. He owes me 20 again.
He owes you another 20 bucks.
I'm taking him to the cleaners. Fights in the first round. The Capitals win double
just
OT.
Just rinsed him. Like, that was actually a very good game. Washington, again,
they needed that. They deserved that.
They deserved it.
You can't lose three straight games in overtime.
Yeah, it's
like
ridiculous.
You can't. You can't. That shouldn't be allowed. Like, when it went to overtime, the league should have stopped the game and said, Washington gets this one.
Regardless. And it still had to go off a skate.
I know.
Goalie Bob is... he's got a force field around him right now.
No kidding, man. That was
crazy.
We'll get into a lot of things that happened last night. Josh Morrissey, his cross-check on Eric Staal, what Boudreaux had to say. We'll let you hear what Bruce Cassidy had to say about Mitch Marner as well and the impact he's had on this series. We'll keep teeing up Game 4 of the Leafs-Bruins tomorrow night. But again, we caught up with Phillips just before we came on the air, and I began by asking Steve Phillips, our baseball analyst, are you surprised it got to this point with Bautista where he has to accept a minor league deal to make it back to the major leagues?
I'm not surprised, not at this stage, with what everything that happened this offseason in free agency. I mean, many players, think about Mark Reynolds, who hit 30 home runs, drove in 90-plus runs with the Colorado Rockies last year. He had a really solid season. He couldn't find work. He signed a minor league deal just a couple of weeks ago with the Washington Nationals. In fact, the Atlanta Braves had offered him a minor league deal, and he said no and ultimately took the one with the Nationals. So there were players that had better seasons last year than Bautista that settled for minor league deals. So it's not surprising. I think Jose deserves a lot of credit for a guy who I perceive to have great pride, all right, a very proud guy in the way he goes about his business, the way he carries himself, the way he prepares himself. And as a baseball player, to be able to get to a point of acceptance that this is the reality of the market, this is the reality of the opportunity, and to be willing to go to a minor league facility in Florida to work out, then go to a minor league team to fight his way back to the big leagues, honestly, I'm impressed by it more than anything else. And it is the reality of the game today.
If you're Alex Anthopoulos and you go down to scout him and you're watching him once he starts actually seeing live games in the minors, what are you looking for to know that he actually is MLB caliber again, or you believe he can bring something to the team?
Well, first and foremost, they're looking at him at third base, right? So the reason that matters is that his legs become a bit less important, right? Chipper Jones played third base until he was 40. And so for Bautista, it's not about running, covering ground, range in the outfield. It's going to be about third base. He's always had good instincts to play the game. He has good hands and a good arm. And he's played, I think, 369 games in the infield, started 369 games in the infield in his career, 349 of them at third base. Now, the reason it's a fit for the Braves is they're the only team in Major League Baseball right now that does not have a home run from their third baseman. And so, in that regard, it fits. The other thing is they have very little right-handed power. They have, 16 homers on the year, 7 of them from right-handed hitters. So they could use some right-handed power. Ryan Flaherty's kind of a journeyman utility guy playing third. He's done a nice job, but he doesn't have that sort of presence in the lineup. So I think for Bautista, it's going to be his ability to recognize ball from strike, to get on base, and if he can work the count and get on, and then run into an occasional home run, you know, he fits, because they're not going to play him every day. That's where things went wrong last year in Toronto. His first off day was July 31st last year. He got run into the ground, could never recover from it, and so the numbers, I don't believe, tell the whole story about what he might have left if managed differently with a different team in a different situation. And so I get why Alex Anthopoulos is taking a shot on him.
with Steve Phillips, our TSN MLB analyst. How about the Blue Jays off to an 11-5 start? And speaking of third base, they're doing it now for the past week without their MVP, without their everyday third baseman, Josh Donaldson. They're not playing the greatest competition. That said, they picked up a win in Cleveland before the rest of the weekend was rained out. Kansas City's a tire fire of a team, but 11-5 is 11-5. Are you starting to believe this could actually turn their way this season?
I think it could. I mean, I thought all along they're going to be led by their starting pitching. And, you know, you've got to win the games in front of you no matter who they are. And sometimes it's not who you play, it's when you play them. And you would think that maybe teams would say, well, we want to play the Blue Jays now because they don't have Donaldson. But other guys have stepped up. And the good news is they're winning without Donaldson. And when somebody starts to cool off a bit, then that's when Donaldson will come back and could start to pick up the offense. And in the meantime, guys are getting some opportunities. And so, listen, they're an interesting team, the Blue Jays are. They're getting some, you know, I think in Jervis Solarte was a huge pickup for them. He brings an energy level and a grit about him that fits the mentality of this team and maybe even elevates it a little bit more. He's such a special player and special personality. And I think in Granderson's that kind of guy, too. It's so funny to me. In New York, fans call into radio there and they say, oh, you know what, the good news is we've kind of moved on from Granderson. We're better without him. And I'm looking at the Blue Jays saying, you know what, he's been a big part of that leadoff spot against right-handed pitching that the Blue Jays are better with him. And Steve Pierce is a nice, nice fit in that leadoff spot against a left-handed starting pitcher. And obviously he had the two starts yesterday against lefties. So, look, the Jays are a gritty team. They've always been that way, a bunch of guys and a collection of players who have always had to prove people wrong along the way. And they're taking this as an opportunity, and they're going out and playing some solid baseball.
I just mentioned what happened in Cleveland over the weekend, where both Saturday and Sunday's games were rained out, and they're going to have to make that up down the road. And this has been a consistent problem throughout baseball because they moved the schedule up, and it's just been an awful early part to the spring throughout the Midwest and the Northeast, even down in the South. I mean, down in Texas when the Jays were down there, it was terrible weather. But how complicated is this going to get in the future, not only for the Blue Jays, but teams in the Midwest, in the East, even teams that went through those regions and had games rained out? How difficult is this going to be for teams going forward?
Well, you know, it's interesting that be careful what you wish for. Players negotiated 4 extra off days, which means we pushed the season into March, and now those extra off days are going to turn into one-game series making up for rainouts from early in the year, and then they're probably going to find themselves in a lesser position now later in the season than they would have been otherwise under the old format and scenario. So, look, it's been a quirky spring, and, you know, I think it's a bit of an anomaly with the way the weather has turned. It's been worse than we've seen in years. And so, you know, I don't know necessarily if it's the early start. I saw Anthony Rizzo came out yesterday and said we should shorten the season and who wants to watch games there and everything else. Now, he's hitting 097. If he were hitting 397, I don't know that he'd be the one saying that we shouldn't play in this cold weather. It's impacting everyone. It's a level playing field. I'm not overly concerned about it. I'm really not. I don't think we should shorten the season. I think that it's just been an atypical spring in a lot of ways where we're getting, you know, snow deeper into April than we normally do. And so I think that it will settle itself out next year. There are going to be some challenges this year fitting in all the games, but I don't think it's going to be a long-term problem.
Thank you, Steve. Always appreciate it.
Thanks. My pleasure.
There's Steve Phillips, our baseball analyst. Again, Jose Bautista signing a minor league deal with the Braves. I don't think he'll be doing any bat flips down there if he launches any home runs.
Never know. I mean, he should go down with a chip on his shoulder. Here's a guy who's had a great career, made a lot of money, been very successful, didn't have a great season last year, but he deserves the respect. That's the one thing he does.
Yeah, and Phillips made that point. Like, you almost have to give him credit because he could have just said, forget it, I'm done. He's got how much money in the bank?
Let's say $100 million in the bank.
Probably $100 million cash in the bank. He could walk away from the game and be happy with his career, and he's willing to grind. He wants to get back.
Good for him.
So I'll give him credit for that. Game 4 tomorrow night, Leafs Bruins down at the ACC. TSN 1050 wants to send you and a friend inside the ACC tomorrow night, delivered by Skip the Dishes. Follow us on Instagram at TSN 1050. Follow us on Instagram, like our latest giveaway post, and tag who you would want to bring to the game. We will announce a winner later today right here on Overdrive. So later this afternoon, we will announce the winner. who's going to the game tomorrow night. Again, courtesy of Skip the Dishes, follow us on Instagram at TSN1050. We'll let you hear what Bruce Cassidy, the head coach of the Bruins, had to say about Mitch Marner and the impact he's had on this series, what we can expect out of him tomorrow night, and Brucey Boudreau with some inflammatory comments post-game last night. He was not a happy man.
No. Hello.
Hello. He was yelling hello at the refs last
night.
Hello.
He was.
So we'll tell you more about that. We'll let you hear it, and we'll get into it next. All right, Jerry's percentages in about an hour. Rays coming up just after 5. He was in L.A. last night. Vegas sweeping the Kings. And now, according to Bodog anyway, it's one site that has it, Vegas favored to win the Stanley Cup. Favored in Vegas.
I didn't see it. I didn't see a sweep. I didn't see them making the playoffs. I mean, just need to continue to eat crow on this one because it's just, it's a great story. Now, last night, the Flower was really good. Like, you know, the Kings had a big push. He made a couple big saves, one on Kopitar. But, like, when you score 7 goals in a series, that's it. Done.
Well, Jonathan Quick, his numbers were off the charts.
I mean,
off the charts.
Both of them are Vezina numbers. Both of them. Mm-hmm. The Flower and Quick.
I saw a stat on Quick today. Let me find it here. I've got it. I made sure to document this or archive it.
Yeah.
Because it speaks to how great Jonathan Quick was. So Quick had, over the 4-game sweep, a .947 save percentage.
Yes.
That's the highest combined save percentage in NHL history by a goalie through 4 losses in a playoff series.
Isn't that crazy?
Like, well, he lost every game with a .947 save percentage.
Well, it speaks to how poor his team executed in front of him.
They couldn't generate any offense.
Couldn't.
They couldn't get through Vegas.
I said this the other day. Game 2, I watched from start to finish, and it ended at 2:30 in the morning or whatever it was, and it was the Harlem Globetrotters versus the Washington Generals. The Kings barely touched the puck, and it was just chance after chance after shot on Jonathan Quick, and he would not break. Like, I at some point, now, the game-winning goal wasn't great. Like, it actually, if you go back and look at it, Hala makes a fake backhand, goes back, and it goes underneath Quick. Quick ends up kind of swimming on his stomach. But if you just looked at that in a nutshell, I'd be like, oh, it's not a great game-winning goal. But I think he was just out of energy. Like, he had literally had his team on his back the whole game.
I still don't think I want to see them have success in year one. And that's just based on jealousy and what the Maple Leafs have gone through for the longest time, all these Canadian teams that haven't had any success.
Exactly.
But I'll say this about the whole Vegas story. I want to see the movie in like 5 years. I hope they don't like Disney up the movie and really make it cheesy and corny. Because if they actually do this, and it's not that far-fetched, like they just swept L.A. They won their division. They are a cup-contending team.
They are.
If they win the Stanley Cup, it will be the craziest sports story I've ever seen. I'm not prepared for it. But again, I want to see the movie in 5 or 10 years.
But
I hope they cast it properly, they write it properly, they invest money in it. But in the moment, I'm not ready to see it.
Don't you feel like it's just... I'm not a big believer in all of the...
Like destiny and all that?
Yeah, like I'm not a... But like... How that season started with 58 people being murdered in Vegas, their first ever game, home game, Derek Eglin has to come out and make an unreal speech.
He scored that night, too.
He did. But it was just, like, if destiny ever had any type of thing involved in sports, like, don't you feel like this season was just touched by destiny with how awful it started as far as a tragedy at the start of the year? I have a friend who's the assistant coach there. I know a few guys on the team, and I've talked to them where they're just like, they know they're good. They know. They're not a bunch of scrubs. They're
you don't go this far into the year, and it's a fluke. They're a legitimately good team.
But they just feel like everything they touched has turned to gold. This is a team that in Edmonton, they had one off night where they lost, I think, 8-1 or something. They were playing their fifth goalie the last 10 minutes of that game. His name is Dylan Ferguson. He was called up from junior, from Kamloops. They were on their fifth goalie. Their fourth goalie was Maxim Lagacy. Goes into Ottawa, comes out here. He's beaten teams left and right. I don't think he'll have a career in the National Hockey League, and that's no disrespect to him. I just don't see him as an NHL goalie.
If you're a fourth stringer, you're probably not going to get there.
You know, they have Oscar Dansk, who got hurt.
They pick up Subban in a trade.
But he
got hurt multiple times.
He's been hurt. I think they got Subban off waivers.
No, they did. You're right. Boston tried to sneak him through waivers. You're right.
And Boston had him, but they had to make a decision. Khudobin had been so good. And you're right. They tried to sneak him through. Dave Pryor, the goalie coach there, liked him, felt that he could work with him because he's a raw talent. And let's not forget the Flower. Like, the Flower has been brilliant. And, you know, he's got playoff experience. And I was talking about this with somebody this morning that if he didn't have those 2 years in the playoffs, I think it was two seasons where they were just disasters. Like, against the Islanders, he was scoring on himself off the boards, and it went off his pad in the net. Against Philadelphia, it was last shot on goal one because him and Briz were scared of whatever, the puck at that point.
That was difficult to watch.
9-8 they were winning.
Yeah, a guy of that caliber with that kind of a resume. First overall pick and maybe the deepest draft in history. Won a cup, back-to-back cups, and he looked honestly
scared to play hockey.
Scared, like, terrified. Like he'd have to retire because he couldn't do it anymore.
And I mean, here I am at TSN doing hits on, like, is the Flower going to be okay? What's going on? But if you took out, and you can't because it's a long career, but if you took out those couple years, like, this guy's just been money his whole career.
Yeah, he's a Hall of Famer.
Money.
He's on his way to a Hall of Fame career. And
absolutely,
he might get there anyway with the way everything's going. He's still only 31, 32?
Yeah, I think he's 31.
He's an 85.
So he's
32, 33. He'll be 33 this year. We got to get into what happened in Minnesota last night. Josh Morrissey cross-checking Eric Staal while the Wild were on a power play. It was 0-0 at that point. Bruce Boudreau with some comments post-game, and we'll let you hear what the head coach of the Bruins had to say about Mitch Marner. We'll get to that in 2 minutes. Bruce Boudreau is one of our favorites. We're a big fan. We've all met him. We've known him for a while.
Love him. He's awesome.
Hello.
He's been on the show many times.
Yeah, he's the best.
We hung him out to dry last time he was on.
Yes, we did.
That's where hello comes from.
Hello.
And last night, that was basically a must-win game. It's the same situation the Leafs are going to be in tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Where Minnesota was down 2-1. Winnipeg really showed up last night. Now they're down 3-1. They got to go home. But the bigger story that came out of it was what happened in the first period where Josh Morrissey cross-checked Eric Staal in the neck.
Yep.
When the Wild were already on a power play. And I don't think this is even open for debate. You have to suspend them. You absolutely have to. If the league doesn't suspend them, it's an embarrassment based on the precedents they've already set. And I don't want to hear, I didn't mean to do it. That's what Kadri said. That's what Doughty said. You can't take that into consideration. You did it. You cross-checked the guy in the head.
Yeah.
You can't do it. You have to be responsible
for your stick.
Yeah. You have to suspend him if you're the league.
Yeah.
But I didn't think Boudreau played this properly. Quite frankly, as much as I'm a fan of his,
right,
I really didn't like what he said post-game. Let's hear this. When he stepped up to the podium and he was asked about that, the missed call when they didn't actually hand over whether it was going to be a 2, 4, 5, whatever, when Morrissey cross-checked Eric Staal. Here's what Boudreau said post-game.
My take is it the same take that everybody in the building saw it as the refs looked at it and they decided not to call it because we were already on the power play. Cost us the game.
That last comment there is an awful look. You cannot say that cost you the game. It was 0-0 in the first period.
Right.
0-0 in the first period. It was a blatantly missed call.
Yeah.
It should not have happened. I understand why he's rattled. And if he came out and said, you got to make that call, that could have changed the game.
Well,
you can't say it cost you the game. That's letting your team off the hook.
I think that's what, if he used a little bit different verbiage and said, that was a game-changing scenario.
Could have been. No guarantee they score on that 5-on-3.
But it is, I think what he meant is you take a look at it. Let's just say, what do you believe that the call on the ice should have been? A major?
Well, yeah, five in a game. If it's a suspension, it's 5 in a game.
Okay, so he actually points out later in his media that Not only did they not get a 5-on-3 in that scenario, Morrissey continues to play. He gets an assist on the game-winning goal. He gets...
That happened in the first period.
Right, yeah.
They had two more periods to score one goal.
But Morrissey wouldn't have been involved. And then they had a breakaway in the second period that Morrissey broke up with an unreal play. So they would play shorthanded. I think his verbiage should have been, it was a game-changing play.
That's
not,
fine.
Not
but,
the,
not but that's
the,
not what he said.
No,
he said it cost us the game.
Yes.
And for me, that's a terrible message to send. Because you had two more periods to do something.
Absolutely. I think what he was trying to lay out and didn't use his verbiage properly is that play was my TSN turning point, and it happened in the first period, and it changed the dynamic of the game because that player still played, was very effective. Instead, he should have been out. He should have been
kicked out of the game.
And Brucey was actually quite controlled. Like, I thought he was going to be yelling and screaming, but he said, I've got to watch myself here. But you're right. You can't let your own players off the hook because they did. I thought Connor Hellebuyck was brilliant.
He played great.
So Minnesota did push. But here's a team that's missing Parisi and Suter. They're $100 million men. Still found a way to be very effective. Dumba's playing so many minutes, and he's banged up. He got hit with a shot last night, left, came back. They're playing on fumes, and they're still finding a way to at least compete and push against the Jets. I think they've done a lot, but if you had to sit back and be objective, Winnipeg's just a better team.
Yeah, that's they are the a truth. Better team. Yeah, they're
it
a better
is,
team.
It is the truth. But did Minnesota absolutely deserve that call and deserve to be on a 5-on-3 and have a major on Morrissey? Yes, that was a missed blown call.
Yeah, the league has to suspend him partially because of the fact that it was a missed call. He should have been kicked out of the game. He wasn't. Yeah. So you have to compensate for that. And when you suspend Doughty, when you give three to Kadri, and you send a message to the league that you're not going to put up with
it. You're sending a heavier message.
Right.
Because
you can't let a guy cross-check someone in the head and get away with it. You can't.
We said this. I didn't think Doughty's was one. On this show, I didn't like Kadri.
Kadri's was at least a game or two, no doubt.
But I thought it was two. He got three. If Morrissey, to me, that's one. Like, has to be one.
Has to be. So, and we'll see what the league says. And I mean, you know, Paul Maurice is campaigning, and he's saying, that's irrelevant, too. It doesn't matter.
You can say sorry all you want, and
doesn't matter.
But you have to be responsible for your stick.
We'll let you hear what the head coach of the Bruins had to say about Mitch Marner and the impact he's had on the series and what to expect for Game 4. We'll get to that next. All right, Ray's coming up in about 20 minutes. He was calling the Golden Knights Kings series, and I guess that's over, so maybe he's back in Vancouver.
I
don't even know.
Is he happy or sad? Like, I mean, I kind of, if I was calling that, you want that to stretch out a little bit.
Can we go back to Vegas at least for Game 5?
Give me a Game 5. Give me 6 at least. You can go back and forth, off days in between, little golf.
I'd be pushing for 7. Vegas to LA, that's as good as it gets.
It's a very short flight, and you can drive it in 4 hours.
Who cares about the flight? It's the cities we're talking
about
here.
They're amazing.
Vegas and LA, considering the weather up here right now, I mean, are you kidding me?
Yeah, it is ridiculous.
I would love that. All right, so the Leafs are back in action tomorrow night, Game 4. We're going to be down there again at the ACC tomorrow. And, of course, you can hear the game right here on TSN 1050. Bruce Cassidy was asked today, the head coach of the Bruins, about the impact Mitch Marner's had on the series, and Marner's been really good.
Yeah.
Now, the first couple of games, it was kind of difficult to get a read on him.
His last two have been really good. I thought the first one, it was just not much happening for anybody.
Yeah,
really.
It was a weird night. I thought that line actually in Game 1 was their best line, but that's not saying anything. They were so bad, I don't even know what that means.
Yeah.
But Marner made two really, really special plays a couple of nights ago, setting up both Marleau goals, and he's been buzzing. He's played really well. And Babcock was pumping his tires earlier today as well. But here's what the head coach of the Bruins had to say about Mitch Marner, his impact on the series, and what he's meant for the Leafs.
Yeah, I think he's been the most dangerous player against us. I think a lot of it is I like his will. He's got a lot of second effort. I mean, in Boston, Kevin Miller hit him, Tim Schaller, I thought good clean hits, and he kept coming back. So the kid obviously, he's a very competitive player. Besides the obvious, I think it's his willingness to hang on to the puck and separate from people. And he has the ability. He's got some of that crutch in him where when he's got it in open ice, he's a threat to shoot past, and he seems to see everything going on. The game slows down for him. So I don't enjoy playing against him because he's a good player, but I enjoy watching him play the game because he's, like I said, he's competitive and he's got skill and speed. And I think that's it with him. He's just willing to get the puck, wants the puck. Looks like a guy. I don't coach him, but I assume he's in that dressing room and he wants the puck. That's what it seems to me.
I've been really almost taken aback by how even-keeled Bruce Cassidy has been.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to get, you know...
Like, he's really, that's really pumping the tires of a guy on the other team. You're in the middle of a playoff series. I feel like if you ask Babcock that, like, maybe if you asked him about Bergeron or Marchand because he knows them, because he coached them with Team Canada.
If you asked him about Jake DeBrusque.
No, he'd be like, oh, don't know him, just a kid, looks okay, know his dad, Louis's a good guy. You know, that would be it. He would not give that kind of an answer.
No, you're not getting that, but, I think Cassidy also has to realize what market he's in. He's going to get asked questions, and he could just be chippy and say, listen, he's a player that we're trying to beat right now. You want to ask me about him after the series, I will, but right now I'm not going to say anything. And it would be his right to.
Absolutely, and I appreciate the candor, and I think the statement that he made off the top is the interesting one, where he said he thinks that Marner has been their most dangerous player and has been the most difficult player for them to defend against, which isn't surprising with how well he played down the stretch.
Right.
But I feel like coming out of that game, game three, it was more about Matthews scoring and Matthews' celebration. Meanwhile, Marner factored into two goals as opposed to one for Matthews. And I think Marner has been more effective.
Well, he's been more consistent. And you're right, effective because he's found the score sheet more too. But I wouldn't, like, if I was Cassidy, I wouldn't say that, because not that Austin's listening, but you're like, all right, hold on a second here. Like, Austin's capable of taking control of a game too. So I respect him for his comments. Like, he's being honest. Compared him to Krejci as far as holding on to the puck, because Krejci's a patient player too. But it just was, it's almost like he's sitting here around the table having a beer or something and just like, nah, he's a good player, like this, like that. Like, you're right, it doesn't sound like it's going into game four of,
exactly,
you know, like a playoff
massive
battle
game and tomorrow night. But, and that's, he's like, yeah, I really enjoy watching him play.
I kind of feel like that could be a strength of Bruce Cassidy, even with his players, because he sounds like a guy who, like, you can see him, he gets worked up on the bench, but every coach does. But to me, he's got a way about him where I think his players respect him and they can relate to him. And if you actually look at the Bruins, they're farther ahead in their progression. I read a story the other day where Don Sweeney said, like, we're ahead of the plan. We felt we knew we had these young kids, but we didn't think, kind of like what Toronto was last year. You know, we've got these young kids. We're not sure how good they are. We just kind of get them into the lineup and see how things settle. We've got good leaders. We've got good goaltending, all of that. It almost mirrored some of the comments that came out of Toronto's camp last year. Yeah, we've got these young, talented players. We're not sure how it's going to work out. And Sweeney said that the other day. And I think Cassidy's been a really good coach for them because he's allowed them to be creative in a system where there's a lot of support. And with the support, those guys aren't really out of position a lot of times because their centermen are so strong and in helping. You know, Krejci and Bergeron are two of the best as far as positionally in the offensive zone and the defensive zone,
the neutral zone. You watch them live; they're always in the right position.
They're just strong in good areas. So
yeah, they're smart.
That
players.
Helps those young kids. But I like the comments by Bruce.
Well, I think they're honest. I don't dispute that. We'll get into who we believe will be more impactful going forward into Game 4 tomorrow night. Will it be Marner? Will it be the Matthews line? Rays coming up, and Jerry's percentages at 5:30.